This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
It's 12 minutes after the hour of 5 o'clock here in Central Virginia. We're joined live in studio by John Whitehead. He is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. Happy holidays. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
It's good to see you. We were talking out in the lobby that this is actually a very busy time of year for you. I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought maybe things start to slow down a little bit, but you sound very busy.
Legal cases don't slow down. The civil liberties deprivations are increasing. We work with a lot of students. We have 14 University of Virginia students that study with us during the year and meeting with them and signing projects. And they all get a pretty neat dose of what goes on in civil liberties with certain federal intelligence agencies. We put them on kind of a lot of projects, and most of them are headed to law school, which is good, and I'm trying to orient them to pro bono work, working in the area of giving their time and trying to instill those kind of values. And most of them are very, very good students. They really get into it. They love researching drones, for example, in Afghanistan, which is very ominous. The so-called guided missiles, where a young guy sits in Las Vegas and picks out targets on the ground.
Amazing.
Civilians have been killed. And one of the students unearthed an amazing fact the other day, which I'm going to write about. Some local police agencies have been meeting, and they want to use drones in this country, small versions of drones.
In our country?
In our country, yes.
To monitor people?
Monitor people, but maybe use it as some kind of weapon against so-called terrorists, which these days... depending on who's doing the labeling, as we'll see, maybe when we talk about the Elliott Madison case, you can become a terrorist very, very easily in this country, or an extremist, they will call it.
Yeah.
But, we've been very, very busy, legal calls, cases, and a lot of Christmas kind of issues pop up this time of year.
Yeah. Well, we want to talk about that. We've got a lot of stuff we want to talk about. We're joined by John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute, and the phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. John, let's start, if we can, with just sharing your experience that we had recently at Piedmont Virginia Community College. You were on a panel that I moderated, hosted by the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression, and it explored this idea of free speech in America and the disruption of free speech. And I should let folks know that Sean Tubbs of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network recorded a fantastic sound file of the conference and the discussion, and we'll be bringing that to you next week. Lots of excerpts from that. But what did you think of that?
I thought it was a good panel. I thought the audience was very, very good.
Lots of great questions, right there?
Yeah, over 100 people. Yeah. Very, very bright. Very good questions. A friend of Abby Hoffman was there, which I thought was kind of interesting. Abby Hoffman, who interrupted more speeches probably than anybody in the 60s. And I thought that the subjects were, you know, we covered it, you know, the subject very well, so-called civility and the limits of civility. But like I always say, civility is not a precondition to free speech. So we've seen the great men of history, like Martin Luther King, that decided they were just going to break the law and go to jail. And I remember back in the 60s when you're trying to get through a city and there were five black students sitting in the middle of the streets blocking the traffic, not being absolutely, you know, being very peaceful, but people didn't think they were very civil at the time. So
that's an important distinction, I think, because you have folks like, you know, Bob Gibson, with whom I work at the Sorensen Institute, and one of the values that we hold dear is civility in politics.
Sure.
And being able to have a relatively calm, rational, well-informed discussion without demonizing each other. But then, you know, then you join the conversation and say, hey, folks, you know, sometimes freedom and free speech can get a little messy, and we should be comfortable with that.
Let me quote my hero, Martin Luther King. I love this quote. He said, "There is a type of constructive nonviolent tension which is necessary for growth. We must see the need for nonviolent gadflies to create the kind of tension in society that will help men rise from the dark depths of prejudice and racism to the majestic heights of understanding and brotherhood." So he encouraged tension, and you know, he committed civil disobedience and modeled a lot of what he had on Jesus, Gandhi, and people like that, who were troublemakers of their time. But Without that kind of attention, we wouldn't have seen the disappearance of apartheid in South Africa. The Boston Tea Party itself was that kind of tension, civil disobedience.
Yeah.
So there are going to be some great people that are going to step outside the law and disrupt things. And I'm not saying a lot of the disruption I've seen, you know, in some of the meetings have been, you know, that's not exactly what I'm talking about. I think, you know, civility is very important. We need to let people speak, okay? We need to discuss. But, you know, at a certain point in time, depending on what the government's doing, Martin Luther King, of course, had to decide enough's enough, and
yeah.
He did it. So,
And it's important that an American citizen be able to see the distinction, see the difference between somebody who's just disrupting and somebody who, what could represent a step forward in freedom or something that's good for freedom and democracy.
Yeah, I think a lot of times civil disobedience is not the problem, it's civil obedience. We follow along too easily. I mean, after 8 years of George Bush, people just watched. And now we're seeing some problems with our current president. People are raising issues, basic civil liberties issues with Obama. And the question is, how long are we going to allow it to go on until we start raising a hue and cry more? And that's what we do at the Rutherford Institute. We work with a lot of groups like the Constitution Project, the ACLU. We have the same similar concern. So, but, you know, in terms of disrupting, we don't have a right to drown people out now. That's when the local police need to say you're breaking the law. It's disorderly conduct. However, we do have a right to conduct passionate discussions as long as you let the other person speak.
Yeah. We're talking with John Whitehead of the Rutherford Institute. One of the best parts, I think, about that panel discussion that we had, and again, I'll let folks know that we'll have that audio for you next week, thanks to Sean Tubbs of the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. It was when we were talking about the protest at Monticello during the naturalization ceremony, and the folks who stood up and said, you know, we need to protect the Constitution, and they were, as George Bush was speaking,
they said, defend the Constitution, impeach Bush.
Right, right. And these folks were handcuffed and led down the mountain. They weren't arrested, but they were escorted.
I think the police handled that well, yes.
And it was interesting to hear some folks on the panel who said, I didn't like that. I didn't like that because it was in my town. And other folks who sat on the panel, hey, this represents the best thing about free speech, that they could do this. And where did you fall down on that whole thing with the disruption or the protests?
I think they have a right to stand up and speak. But again, if they're disrupting, you know, the police, it's disorderly conduct. They're trying to, you know, police, you know, I thought, again, I said they handled it well. They didn't need to take them to the police station, no.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's... People have a right to speak. I mean, when you're talking about a political figure like a George Bush, I think it's a little different than when you're in a meeting and you're yelling at another citizen and shouting them down. But how much, I don't know. But, you know, let's say a few more people should have spoken up against Hitler, but they didn't. But let me quote Thomas Jefferson here. And Jefferson was a wild man. Here's what he said. What country before ever existed a century and a half without a rebellion? And what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. What signify a few lives lost in a century or two? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Figuratively speaking, I think we should take that figuratively. But, you know, the people who set this country up, we can't forget, they were wild-eyed. And that's what the British called them, terrorists. They thought they were wild-eyed. And we wouldn't have this country if everybody would have been, oh, gee, let's have a cup of tea and discuss it.
John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Chris is on the line in Charlottesville. Chris, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Hi, I've got a lot. Oh, there you go. I had a lot of stuff in my earphone. I couldn't hear what was going on. I still have some stuff going on in the back. People are talking in the background. I can't hear.
Okay, how about that?
But anyway, let me try. I was interested. I just turned the radio on, and I was curious as to why Mr. Whitehead was talking about George Bush and 8 years of people standing around watching. When, you know, what he was doing was taking away people's rights during a time of war. And that's happened in our past before, and I guess people jumped up and down then. But people kind of understood, you know, maybe this is for the benefit of the country, you know, to sacrifice some of the liberties that we have in order to give the government a one-up on the enemy. And I think that's a legitimate reason. Whereas Obama, I think people start yelling out at these town meetings because we feel that that the politicians really don't want us to talk. They don't want us to say anything. They want to get all this legislation in under the door when we're not looking. And that's very suspicious, and I think the people that stand up and yell at these politicians for doing that really are patriots. And I wonder what he thought.
Chris, thanks for the call.
Well, the same people that yelled at George Bush were patriots then. So, George Bush, and I'm again, the great wave of opinion was some of the measures that Bush take. You know, again, I wrote a book called The Change Manifesto. You should just go read the book. It details in about 300 pages the problems we had during the Bush administration, and they weren't all good. No, I agree that in times of wartime, if we're being invaded by an enemy, obviously, yes. But I guess the question, where are we? And most people would disagree with that I've talked to. But the thing is, the Patriot Act, which allowed the government to basically listen to every phone call of every American, the National Security Agency was given a green light, basically delete all email, all websites. This is not of terrorists. This is American citizens. Every constitutional expert I know says that violates the Fourth Amendment. So there's a lot of problems with George Bush during his time. It wasn't just protecting us against so-called terrorists, but it was just basically saying the Bill of Rights was null and void. Once you do that, you open the door for future abuse. And I agree with you, people yelling at town hall meetings, you know, if they're yelling at politicians and letting people respond, yeah, I think that's great. But I still think the people that were upset with George Bush are patriots. We're all patriots if we fight against what we feel to be a bad thing or an evil thing. The Constitution starts with we the people. We have a right to do that. And, you know, agree or disagree, that doesn't really matter. I mean, there are a lot of things people do I don't agree with, but I say, hey, I'll back you. I mean, I have people come in my office all the time that they've done things that I wouldn't do, but I think they have a right to do it, and I'll defend them to the death to do it.
Chris, thank you for the call. We've got a line open at 977-1070, and we're talking with John Whitehead. He is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. And as you heard it, the author of The Change Manifesto, which is very strongly recommended reading. And it's a fantastic book. And let me ask you about Obama. We're just before we go to break here at the bottom, and we'll continue this conversation on the other side, of course, but your most recent commentary asks the question, is Obama a peacemaker or a warmonger? And how do you answer that question?
Neither. That's the answer. Really, neither. If you read the commentary, neither. He's not a peacemaker. What I'm talking about in this commentary, and people should read it, it would be very difficult to discuss it in too much in detail, but it's at our website at rutherford.org. I just talk about the dangers. You know, I quote James Madison, who says, no nation can preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare, and he talks about the military machine. All the founding fathers thought any kind of perpetual warfare, which we're conducting right now, would cause the country to collapse.
Which is why they opposed the standing armies.
They opposed standing armies, yeah. And quartering of soldiers, the Third Amendment, martial law, and all those things. But the United States right now is in 177 countries, 70% of the world's population. We have a military empire that's financially draining the country right now. It was partly responsible for the collapse under Bush, the financial collapse. And Obama is basically continuing it. Do I think he's a peacemaker? Well, his budget for 2010 is probably the biggest defense budget ever, over $1 trillion. It's shocking if you think about it. Now, yeah. He's up for the Nobel Peace Prize. So where will it lead? I don't know. See, the thing I talk about Dwight Eisenhower in 1961 warning us about the military-industrial complex, how it would destroy the country. The thing we have to understand is, and again, it's a long commentary.
And really, it's the same warning we got from the Founding Fathers when they talked to standing armies.
Exactly, warning.
It's the same thing. It's just different words.
When we got to understand, he was the senior Allied commander in Europe. This is Dwight Eisenhower. He became a peacemaker, basically. He said, this is not going to work. And he says, we're draining the lifeblood of our country. He says, you're taking from our laborers. You're going to destroy the country, what he called the military-industrial complex. Right now in Afghanistan, to put those soldiers over there, it's $1 million per soldier to maintain them there. And people go, that's expensive. You know why? Mainly because of private contractor billings, which there's no control over them. You're talking about Blackwater, KBR. fraud, waste. I mean, they actually discovered a bank that was built over like 6 or 7 months ago, supposedly a functional bank. It had no insides. It was just built at taxpayer expense. So there's a lot of fraud going on.
Yeah.
Are we watching that? No, I don't think anybody's watching what's going on with the money. And again, if you read my book, The Change Manifesto, I talk about that. There's more of that kind of waste. I think if we're watching it carefully and we're trying not to expand so far around the globe, but remember, Rome fell, and the only thing that saved Great Britain, and this comes from Chalmers Johnson, Sorrows of Empire, a book you should read, a great historian on military empires, the only thing that saved Great Britain is they withdrew from their empire. They saved their democracy. And the question is, here at home, and I'm not the only one saying
this. Well, and they outsourced their military budget to a place called America. And we became their military arm, and they didn't have to pay for it anymore.
So what's happened, I think, we got to understand that civil liberties will crumble. There's a moral collapse that usually comes with this kind of thing. And it's, again, I'm just drawing from what all these other experts have written. Again, I highly recommend Chalmers Johnson's book, Sorrows of Empire. And he's really studied this subject.
Yeah.
And he fears, he's predicting financial collapse entirely if we don't watch out for military spending, because it will drain the country.
Well, there's certainly not, you know, we've known throughout human history that there's fortunes to be made during wartime, but it's just gotten to be the norm. Is that your point, that it's just...
Well, I think the military, it's the tail wagging the dog. I think the military complex is so very, very powerful that it's very, very... Again, there are a lot of articles out there. For example, some of these private contractors actually contradict the generals and say, we're pulling back. If you don't do what we're going to do, we're not going to bring our supplies and stuff in. And they actually sometimes dictate to the military.
That's scary stuff. Yeah,
it's pretty scary. I mean, remember, we all complain. I mean, most people that were concerned about Blackwater over in Iraq, Blackwater works for President Obama now in Afghanistan. A group that's come under fire for a lot of human rights abuses, waste, and fraud. It's working. So the question is, are we really accounting for the money we're spending over there? And I have great questions about it, and I raise it in the article. I just raise questions. People need to go do their own research.
Meanwhile, you've got local governments that don't have enough money for their schools and to build sidewalks and new roads, and that's only going to be worse next year.
Oh, yeah, and you have an unemployment rate that in the black community is over 15%. It's rising in other minorities. I mean, people can't get jobs in America. So where should our emphasis be?
Let's take a quick phone call before we break for local news here at the bottom of the hour. David's on the line in Charlottesville. David, you're on with John Whitehead. Go right ahead.
Yes. I think if you're going to criticize spending of money abroad for Iraq, we first and foremost need to look here in this country at what we spend here.
I agree, yeah.
There's as much, if not more, fraud that goes on in money spent here. So I think to point the blame totally at the military.
Well, I'm not doing that. See, I was asked a question about my column on the military. I agree with you 100%. I think our government is corrupt. I mean, when we were trying to find figures the last 3 or 4 days on how much money the military spent, it's almost impossible to find. It's because the government hides the money. I mean, you have to go to multiple sources to figure out what in the world's going on. So I agree with you. And again, it even filters down to local governments. But why is that so? Because we, the people, are not watching. We're not going down to the local city hall. We're not doing our own research and going out and complaining to our senators and Congress that they're wasting money. And we want to talk about in a minute about my column, why we should be mad as hell. If you listen to that, you should be even madder than hell after that.
David, thanks for the call. Let's take a break for local news and weather. And when we get back, we'll get mad as hell with John Whitehead. This is Charlottesville Right Now. 38 minutes after 5 o'clock in Central Virginia. It's about 50 degrees. I hope you're having a good little Friday. I'm Coy Barefoot. This is Charlottesville Right Now. News Radio 1070 WINA. Join me tomorrow broadcasting live from the Fashion Square Mall for the Toy Lift 2009. Complete details available online at kidslift.org. We're talking with John Whitehead, the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. So, you have a commentary under the title, Why Your Representatives Should Make You Mad as Hell. And I guess the subtext is, you know, they're not, but they should be.
Yeah, you just have to do your research. We just did a little research into all the perks that the people we send to Congress. Besides, they get nice salaries, some up over $200,000. They get free gym membership. They get health care, which is second to none. It cannot be denied because of their age or a pre-existing condition. On top of their six-figure salaries, and many of them are millionaires, and they still get the same perks, and all the millions of dollars we do in maintaining their offices in their home state in the nation's capital, they enjoy free life insurance, generous retirement plan for life, 32 fully reimbursed road trips home a year.
Now, you said that very quickly, but I want to go back to and underscore that. They get a pension for life.
You get a pension for life.
I mean, you could go in and serve 2 years one term, and you still get... You're going to get a paycheck for the rest of your life.
32 fully reimbursed road trips home a year, travel to foreign lands. There are extras, including discounts in the Capitol Hill tax-free shops, restaurants, free reserve parking at Washington National Airport, and it goes on forever. And what was amazing, though, Politico recently did an article which underscores my article, which you can read at Rutherford.org, but... House Speaker Nancy Pelosi spent $2,993 in taxpayer money on flowers between June and October. That's taxpayer money. House Majority Whip James Clyburn has a thing for Chantilly Donuts, spending about $265 at a donut shop. And it goes down the line. Public money.
Yeah.
Pelosi spent like $2,740 on bottled water. This is taxpayer money. These people live very, very well. They get... We work with a lot of veterans who complain about Walter Reed Hospital, and it's many of them, and they do. Veterans struggle, and that's one thing I worry about, increasing troops and all these guys come limping home. I have widows who call me and email me. They can't get help for post-traumatic stress syndrome for their husbands, and they're wondering what we can do. However, the people in Congress go into Walter Reed Hospital in what they call the golden elevator. They go to the top. They get top care. If they can't go, they might have a cold. The doctor's sent over to them, you know. So, and they ride around limos. And remember the flap over the two jets that they million-dollar jets that they just financed right in the middle of the whole financial collapse, where they can fly around.
You think this is what the founders had in mind, that those who serve in the nation's capital would be this separate class from everyone else?
That's it. They never saw a separate class. It was, remember, George Washington went home. After his president became a farmer, you know, they never saw it as a full-time job. It was what servants went to Congress to do. So, you know, what again, how do we control this? Well, someone's got to be in control of the money and watching it. No one is, and we're not raising a hue and cry about it. Most people don't even know this stuff happening. Spending all that money on flowers. I don't pay my representative to get flowers on their desk. I don't buy flowers for my desk.
Yeah.
They work 2 to 3 days a week on average. I work weekends sometimes. So the question is, what can we do? I definitely think term limits are really, really due on some of these people. I mean, I think 8 years is enough time to serve in any kind of public office and get fresh blood in. Coy Barefoot should be in Congress.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I mean, what I'm saying, let well, everybody now, what do you, go to the
yeah.
top.
But well, what do you say to the folks, John, then, who say, well, no term limits exist at the ballot box, and I should be able to put into office whoever I want to put into office if that's who I want to vote for, and there shouldn't be a law that tells me I can't vote for that person.
Well, then you're going to get this stuff here. You're going to get a permanent class, eat very fine meals, fly around in jets, ride in limousines, and completely insulated. You wonder why the country's in the mess it is and why we people, well, the approval rating for Congress is the lowest it's ever been right now. It's like 16%. People intuitively know it, but they don't know what to do about it. So there has to be some kind of fix. I think that John Kerry, who has like a $167 million fortune, should not be getting free haircuts and free flowers put on his desk. No. I don't think the Founding Fathers envisioned that one. excuse me. What am I saying? The government's not accountable to us anymore.
John Whitehead is the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, joins us once a month to share some of his thoughts and commentary on public affairs. Betty is on line one in Charlottesville. Betty, you're on with John Whitehead. You go right ahead.
Thank you. I feel so privileged to talk to you, Mr. Whitehead, and I so appreciate everything you're doing in our community. I've been a member of a group that's been trying to look into our water plan for 2 years. And I have gained a lot of inspiration from your encouragement that citizens should look into these things. And I'm now asking your help because our group, our little group, works many, many, many hours every week trying to keep up with all the documents and the misleading information. And now we have another situation in our community, and we need another group to step forward to look into our solid waste authority. I've become increasingly concerned. There's an article in The Hook this week about a private recycling operation that has now been permitted to recycle our trash, Mr. Peter van der Linden, and I believe unjustly he is being sued and that our solid waste authority is harassing him and is trying to shut him down. And I wish I had another life because I'd love to be looking into this. But I'm pleading with the community, please get involved. I know Coy Barefoot's been involved. Others have been involved. We need to, as you said, do our own research. We cannot believe what we're being told. I found time and time again with the water plan, what we were told was just wrong. It was not correct. And I believe the same thing's happening here. And anything you could do to encourage people or help us, I would appreciate. Thank you so much.
Betty, thanks for the call.
I would say this. If you don't have a group, you need to get a group and get people together. Yeah. And I think it's a good time for people, if they can get a hold of Coy or something, they want to be involved, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a station. I mean, that's how you do it. I keep telling people.
Well, they need to buy a copy of your book, Change Manifesto, too, because that is the blueprint for what we're talking about. How do you step forward and make a difference in your community?
And you can do it. I think this lady, obviously, by just making the phone call and doing what she's doing, is making a difference. But they respect numbers. We've done press releases from the local representatives here, and we've actually get called from their assistants saying, what are you doing to us? Because they got 100 calls. 100 calls totally freaks them out because they know that there's a groundswell there and people are upset. So
and that's true at the local level,
the state level, the national level.
My dad would tell me that, you know, one of the things that they always paid attention to when they would have these hearings on Capitol Hill, my dad, of course, was chief of staff for Senator Thurmond for many, many years. And he said all of these professional advocacy groups, they always start with, we represent this many millions of people, or this many millions of people subscribe to our newsletter. They always started with, we're here representing a whole lot of people.
And that works.
It does work. It really does.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would get involved in these issues. I think, you know, in a Change Manifesto, I have a 10-step process, but there are all kinds of inventive things you can do to get their attention.
Yeah.
Get press coverage. That's really, really important.
And Betty talks about not having time or being pressed for time, which all of us, that is, and one thing I just want to say is, that's nothing new. I mean, Jefferson wrote about the fact that everybody's busy, you know, during the American Revolution. It was like, hey, I don't have time for this. I'm busy. I'm working. I got a farm. I got kids. And that is nothing new.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, getting one, two people and cooking up with emails and just expand it out slowly. It's nothing's going to happen overnight, because I'll be honest with you, I think the corruption in the United States at many levels is staggering. So it's not going to change overnight. If we're expecting change overnight, that's not going to happen. It's going to be slow and gradual, but we have to start somewhere. And I'm an older person. I can think. I look at young people today. I met with a group of UVA students today, and I said, "It's you and your children that are going to suffer all this stuff, all the taxes, the huge national deficit, which could cause a financial collapse. It's your children, and we're going to have to." I mean, I'm talking to young people, older people, but I really fear for the your 8-year olds.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I fear for your 8-year olds, Coy, because they're going to grow up in a world. They're going to what's hit us. But, you know, someone dropped the ball along somewhere, and it's people who say, well, gee, we shouldn't really criticize the president. And well, that's we should be criticizing our president. Remember what Madison said, James Madison. He was absolutely, we ought to mistrust all those in power. And he didn't mean just say, oh, gee, I don't trust him. He meant do something about it. That's why he wrote the Bill of Rights. So, yeah, you got to start somewhere. But I think, you know, starting with one, two, three people.
Yeah. And Thomas Jefferson wrote, confidence is everywhere the parent of despotism.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have confidence in your leaders. You're supposed to, our job is to be suspicious and ask questions and get involved.
That's what a real patriot's about. The other gentleman said, yeah, patriots challenge their leaders, yes.
Now,
and we don't want to go along with every leader. No, again, people are starting to, you know, I mean, I read people on the far left that are very concerned about Obama's civil liberties now. He hasn't changed the Bush civil liberties policies. They're concerned. And they should be. They're starting to critique him. And that's our job. And it's not un-American to criticize your president. No, it's American and patriotic to do so.
John Whitehead is with the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, you wrote a recent commentary about tweeting. What do you have to say about that?
Well, the recent G20 summit in Pittsburgh, and again, we have a really good vodcast on our website, an article I wrote, is tweeting now a felony under federal law? There was a fellow named Elliot Madison. We've talked with his attorney. He is a 41-year-old self-styled anarchist. He calls himself an anarchist. So he was arrested on September 24th, 2009. It's being referred to a federal grand jury now, whether he's violated the federal anti-rioting law. What he did, Madison sat in Pittsburgh. He was from Brooklyn. He allegedly listened to a police scanner, which according to Pennsylvania law is not against the law. It's legal. He blogged about it on Twitter to help fellow protesters and law enforcement at that conference to avoid the police. If you've seen any of the video from the conference, you'll see why they were avoiding the police. They were in their total garb with nightsticks, banging them, walking down the street toward protesters. There's a great scene on our vodcast where there's two young people in the street, and these guys are walking down the street with their shields, their helmets, their combat boots. These are local police in Pittsburgh banging these sticks at them. Of course they ran away, but they had a right to be there in the first place. So, you know, again, a number of articles raised this anti-riot law is so vague that if you just – what he did – the FBI actually came into his home in Brooklyn, took downloaded stuff from his computer, took his Buffy the Vampire Slayer DVDs, a picture he had of Lenin, the Russian revolutionary, confiscated all that stuff. I mean, they came in his home and did a raid. This called, mainly
because he was tweeting to friends.
That's it.
About what he was hearing on the police scanner.
Yeah, we talked to his attorney. We're waiting to see what the grand jury is going to do. It's been referred to a grand jury where they're going to indict this guy. But Martin Luther King sat in jail.
I don't even know. How is that even illegal?
Martin Luther King sat in jail and told people basically to get out and protest and commit civil disobedience. See, he had been charged under this law as well as a number of writers. I quote writers who said, well, what about Martin Luther King? So what we've come to is we can take these – and this is happening under Obama's Justice Department. So, I mean, it's
– if you think about when those people were approaching the Eben Pettus Bridge in Alabama – if somebody had called them and said, hey, there's a lot of police out here at the bridge.
Ready with fire hoses, dogs.
They got fire hoses, they got dogs, they're going to get you. That's basically what this guy
did. That's what they did.
He let them know, hey, they're, you know, I just, that, it's
amazing.
Well,
yeah, if you watch the videos of the police in Pittsburgh, they use sound cannons, by the way. They go through the streets. And if you don't know what the sound cannons are, they emit this amazing shriek. This is local police have these. And it can cause piercing of the eardrums. It can cause aneurysms. And that scatters people. They can't. They have to hold their ears and run off the street. This is because they wanted to protest what was going on at the summit. So, but Madison's been targeted. He's sort of the poster boy for you can't do this. And a very similar thing happened not too long ago when they raised tuition in California. A number of Berkeley students started protesting, a large number of them, over the tuition costs that were hiked. And some students did the same thing. They listened to scanners and Twittered ahead, and now they've got a few of them basically on kind of similar state charges. So,
wow.
Yeah, they make an example of people. But the question is, should the government be what they're doing in the first place in the streets with the way that they were doing it at the G20 with sound cannons and riot gear and smacking people around? Is that what we really want in America? A number of writers at the time wrote that they could not believe this had happened in America. A number of columnists, they were shocked. And if you didn't follow this, you were asleep, folks.
Yeah. John, do you feel that, and I've never put this question like this. We've talked about this concept so many times, but I don't think I've ever put the question just like this. Do you feel that America has become or is becoming the country, the type of country that our founding fathers revolted against?
I think, I think Thomas Jefferson would be very, very concerned. I quoted him earlier on.
Yeah.
He said, well, you know, he talked about a rebellion every 20 years reforming the government. Yeah, I think they would be shocked. Yeah, they saw government, the federal government especially is very limited. It was not to be what it's become.
Yeah. Well, they certainly saw a lot more power at the state levels. Yeah, definitely.
When you can have a fellow who listens to a scanner, Twitters ahead, and the FBI follow him home and raid his apartment to see what he's got there, we're living in precarious times.
John Whitehead, he's online at rutherford.org. Before we let you go, and we just have a few minutes, a couple of minutes, but your thoughts on Christmas and the holiday season?
I think it's a great time of the year. The problem, though, is all the cases we see where schools are completely taking it out of the schools. They won't let kids pass out Christmas cards. We even see it in private employers telling employees they cannot have a little Christmas tree in their cubicle. All that's against the law, by the way. They have a right to do those things. But for some reason, we've got very politically correct. I hope we don't destroy one of the neatest times of the year. My wife, who passed away 6 months ago, was a Christmas freak. So
yeah, this was her time of year, wasn't it?
Why are we afraid to talk
about Carol loved Christmas.
Why are we afraid to talk about Christmas? I mean, it's there's a reason. I mean, 2,000 years ago, something happened, supposedly, whether it's true or not. It's we just need to face the truth. We're so politically correct today that we're afraid to use the word Christ in Christmas, which I think has become an absurdity because, I mean, if we didn't have the whole Christmas thing to begin with, we wouldn't even be celebrating it. So what are we celebrating now? So, but yeah. You know, I think we need to be sensitive to other people. But
in many respects, it's become the celebration of the economy, of the power of
buying and gifting, where people – I had a fellow who emailed me last year, and he said it shocked him. He said that they did away with their Christmas party. They had a winter break party or something. He said people actually whispered Merry Christmas to each other like it was pornography. They were afraid to say the word.
Amazing.
But we see tons of cases this time of year.
I bet you do. Yeah.
We have a thing called the 12 Rules of Christmas, which you can download from our website that shows you how you can do it legally. And again, I don't think we should oppress people of other faiths or that, but that's not what you're talking about. You're letting just people enjoy themselves and have fun for a few weeks.
John Whitehead, he's the CEO and the founder of the Rutherford Institute, online at rutherford.org. John, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Thank you for being here.
Same to you, sir.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.